Greetings one and all, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It is the last day of November 2016. I'm Y-Rot, here alongside Rollo T. Chris, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going fantastic, Nick.
It's fantastic.
It's going amazing. It's been a day already.
It has been a day.
Stepped on a nail, I staple gunned my hand. You can't really see it too well, but put a bandage on it after staple gunning it. And I'm slowly becoming more face-to-face with my own mortality, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, news, I recently got diagnosed with something, and I realized I should have phrased that better, because when I said it like that, it immediately sounds like I was going to follow it up with,
you're going to die.
I have super cancer. Right after
saying that you came face to face with your own mortality, I was diagnosed with something. Wait a minute.
I'm diagnosed with something. They said I had super cancer, which is something they've never heard before, as evidenced by its very unscientific and unmedically diagnosed name. But no, I recently got diagnosed with sleep apnea. Basically just means you stop breathing during your sleep, and it's not as dangerous as it inherently sounds, but it does mean that you don't get very good sleep. You get very restless.
Right, your body doesn't get as rested when it's supposed to be.
Yes, and I've felt tired for the longest freaking time in my life. Like, I always wake up in the morning, I'm just exhausted. Like, I almost literally have to drag myself out of bed. It was to the point where I was like, the only alarm at this point that I feel like would work, the alarm I want, is when my alarm goes off, it doesn't need to make a noise, but my bed is spring-loaded to just shoot me forward across the room into a wall, and I'll put padding and stuff down there, but that's the only way I'm going to be, like, actively, like, get out of bed in the morning and feel alert in any way, shape, or form. So
When I was in high school, I would go to bed late and want to sleep in late, but school started at 7 in the morning, so I couldn't. So my parents were constantly having to wake me up so that I would actually go to school. Like, I was late, like, once in the entire time that I was going to high school. Never had an unexcused absence, had one unexcused tardy. But they were always like, oh my god, get the fuck up. Go to school. Wake up. They got me a special alarm clock that you could plug your lamp in so that it would flicker it on and off. And that still didn't work. So they were constantly trying to think of, like, inventions that they could make to actually get me to wake up in the morning.
So, like, all right, so when this alarm goes off, it starts a lighter, which is going to burn this rope of the anvil that hangs above your head. So you have to be really aware. You got to hit it. There's no snooze alarm. Your snooze alarm is slumber forever. So make sure you get that. I will be getting the sleep app machine sometime, like, in the next couple weeks. So that's the good news of it. Yeah, I don't want people being like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's, you know, like, don't worry
right,
about
you
that.
Right, when you get diagnosed with something like that, that means that you can take steps to fix it.
Yeah, that's the good news of it. So there's that to look forward to in the next 2 weeks. But because of this, I'm already sort of, like, dreading my birthday, which is coming up in a couple weeks. Because I'm just like, oh, this frail, shitty body's falling apart already. It's not even 30 yet, and it's already just crumbling to pieces, and I kept such good care of it. It's just like a montage to me. A montage to me when I was 21, working at Target, just like walking in with a box of fucking microwave chicken for an entire family and a 2 liter soda. Like, this is lunch for one person for today.
Oh, God. That 28, that's when everything just falls apart, dude.
Yeah, I know.
It's I've got like 4 more months left to enjoy this.
Yeah, I've got about 3 weeks left to become an NFL superstar before there's just no chance ever of it happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's like running backs retire at that age, man.
Yeah, so I already wasn't going to do well. I'm already pretty slow, so that wasn't a good possibility.
Calvin Johnson was like looking at his watch like, oh man, life's almost over now.
What's left for me?
Being on Dancing with the Stars and being healthy and rich at age 30.
He's like, I've done it all. Dancing with the Stars, the NFL. There's nothing left for me to conquer. I truly understand how Alexander the Great felt now.
And he wept, for there were no more passes to catch. You didn't even win us a Super Bowl. Shut up, you guys suck.
Okay, it's like, yeah, well, you know what? You can't drag that much shit up a mountain and still manage to make it, all right?
We're leading the division 2 years after you left. Oh, honey, you think that that's going to last.
Yeah.
Oh,
shit. Yeah, you know what you got for that? A shit ton of no rings.
Wow. So we are currently working on our current manga recommendation. I think that we'll probably be ready to discuss that next week, because, I mean, it's a decent sized manga at this point, but it's not like it's a particularly hard story to follow. So that's coming up fairly soon, I think. But in the meantime, we've just got our regular series minus World Trigger. And minus Toriko. This is going to be so weird.
It's strange. I started writing Toriko on like my little list of chapters, and I was like, oh man, it's... what the fudge? It's not there!
Which means that if we go as we usually do, we're going to finish on Ruby.
I know.
Which is super awkward.
Yeah, especially since I barely read this week's chapter, so who knows?
It was like, what are our other options? We could put Ruby somewhere else and then go to Red Sprite.
Which is also ending this week, so after
maybe
that...
Maybe we should just roll dice to see what chapter we cover.
Just a fucking random lottery.
Just do it randomly.
Didn't we do that at one point?
We did do that. Let's do that again. Fuck it.
All right, fine. Do you want to...
I'll get it ready. You just, like, I don't know, by time.
Oh, sweet. My best thing that I'm good at. Vamping. Let's
do improv comedy, Chris.
let's just snap it on real quick. Well, I was going to say, let's cut this out of the way now, just so we can assure that Ruby won't be the last manga we discuss this week. We'll start off with Ruby, chapter 5, I think? Yeah, chapter 5.
I think
still
it's
no
chapter
title.
Five.
Still no title for this series, or for chapters, which deals with Blake, who is the B in the titular Ruby. I'm assuming, because she's wearing all black, and they all seem to be based off colors.
There's a bumblebee in this group?
So it starts with her... I think she's like a thief of some kind, and this is all about her kind of...
Don't look at me about this. I don't know anything about this series. I have deliberately avoided Ruby for the last 3 years.
You're like...
Pure hype backlash and nothing else. I've just been like, no.
I refuse.
You guys... Well, because after Homestuck, when I wasted like 2 days of my life reading 400 strips of that, before I was just like, this sucks. All of you have terrible taste. I was just like, no more... super overhyped internet created bullshit.
I like to imagine someone out there is just gonna like edit the whole like Ryan like trying to get Ryan Gosling to eat cereal thing that was out there. Do you remember that? Or maybe
the thing where
they take a spoon up to it and
hold it up, put it in front. That was such a weird meme.
I want that with you, but somehow you just contained Ruby with on a spoon. And it's like, Nick, take some Ruby. It's like, no. She's robbing a train with her partner. Oh no, she's Blake. Her partner is Adam, which is some guy with like a half mask sort of thing. It almost looks like Godot or Godot from Ace Attorney 3. And it's a train filled with robots. And they have their standard unable to confirm identity. Please respond or fire. Like they already have the machine guns coming out, which I always think is an interesting way for robots to like.
Shows first, ask questions later.
Yeah, it's like, please present registration as I prepare all armaments to murder you. It's just like, can't you wait a quick second here?
First law of robotics, leave no room for retaliation. Second law of robotics, show me your boobs.
I'm like, ooh, this is a weird robot law. I never heard this.
No, it's the karaoke machine.
Oh, right. Oh, so he's like, take off your clothes. And then do closing time. Like, oh, well, you just have the karaoke machine. That's the important thing. Or wasn't it a photo booth?
It was a photo booth, yeah.
It's people who didn't listen to the bonus podcast, like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
What are you talking about?
Anyway.
The character we came up with, it almost made it into the roast.
It was in there, we just didn't have time to write it. He's the forgotten person. He's like the lost soldier of Hungary. Holy shit. All right, I gotta stay on topic. So they attack them, Blake and Adam, because I guess the gist of these first chapters are essentially just sort of like pieces, vignettes to show off the characters and how awesome they are at fighting and what their abilities are and give you a taste of what their character and backstory is. So for this one, the entire chapter is basically Blake and Adam in the train killing a whole bunch of robots in, like, you know, big two-page spreads and everything like that. And you get a little bit of this idea that maybe there's some tension between Adam and Blake, but there's not really much to, like, gather from that, because the chapter literally ends with them being like, hey, let's get these fucking cases. What about the crew? Adam? Adam? And then there's, like, a robot behind them, and that's credits. Like, that's the chapter end. So there isn't a tremendous amount to discuss or digest in this chapter. We don't even really get that much about Blake. There is technically a glimpse of her at the start where she talks about someone called, like, Fausen, or how do you pronounce this? Faunus? Faunus, I guess? So maybe she's stealing to save Faunus, whoever that is. Also, I would like to note, the past few weeks have been calling the character Weiss, or, like, Wise, you know, the German for snow character, or white. Someone told me you shouldn't need to pronounce it like that, because according to canon, I'm taking this as one person saying this to me, but according to the canon, they're like, well, Germany doesn't exist in Ruby, so we don't have to pronounce it in German. And I don't know why. I understand the context. I understand the idea. Like, it's, like, letter-wise, you know, alphabetically, it's spelled the same way. You just phonetically wouldn't pronounce it the same way. But just that, like, explanation in my mind makes me laugh so hard. It's just like, no.
Germany doesn't exist in this world, so you don't have to say it like it's German.
Yeah, Germany doesn't exist, so we don't have the German pronunciation. It's just like, wait, no, that's not how it works, right?
Mexico and Spain don't exist in Hueco Mundo, but everything's pronounced as Spanish in there.
I love that idea. Well, it's like Mexico and Spain still exist in the Bleach world. They're just not part of the Hueco Mundo. Well, theoretically they do. Who fuck knows? We never leave Japan.
The person who named everything was Spanish. And then they're like, dibs. I call dibs on naming everything. You guys have to learn how to pronounce it in your terrible Japanese.
The first Spanish ghost died, and he's just like, he's mine. He's mio. It's just like, God damn it. God damn it! So yeah, that's Ruby for this week.
Okay.
What are we talking about next, Nick? This is exciting. I don't know what's going to happen next.
Fuck, we're doing Black Clover first anyway.
I hope this follows the exact...
This goes alphabetically.
The exact same fucking order as last time. We just shoved Ruby to the top.
Okay, so... Black Clover, page 88, devastating thrust. Ooh.
Kinky. And it's already almost like an upskirt shot of Noelle in that first panel, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm serious. So, of course, Asta and company are still engaged in battle with Fauna, the salamander wielder, and Asta declares that he wants to use his special move, but Fauna unleashes a bunch of, a barrage of magic, demonstrating the different types of magic that she can use. She uses mineral magic in order to, like, cast all these discs towards them. And then she uses flame recovery magic to recover some of the damage that she had before. And Asta realizes, oh yeah, wait, this is very similar to that Mars guy that we fought before. And so he asks Fauna, do you have a brother with a pale face and spiky hair? That could describe so many characters, not just in Black Clover, but in all manga ever.
He could literally be saying, hey, do you have a brother who looks exactly like fucking me? Or this dude behind me?
Do you have a brother?
Trying to think who would be like... I guess, do you have a brother who's not the, like, fucking... a giant-looking weird dude from Black Clover, the Black Bulls. Fucking, Guabo, whatever the fuck the giant mime clown dude's name is.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
What the fuck's his name?
I don't know.
God damn it. He's such an important character, Nick. He's more important than Rebecca, who's never gonna be an important character.
Fauna refused to be distracted by this because, revenge, grudge, despair. So Asta continues to say, all right, then I'll have to use my special move. And finally, Fenrir's just like, what is this special move you keep on fucking blabbering about? And Asta says, I'm so glad you asked. I was suddenly hinting that I wanted someone to ask about so I could explain it. And he explains that he just holds both of his swords out in front of himself and just charges. That's his special move.
Well, no, I want to note, he specifically notes, I hold both swords in front of me and charge straight through the air at ferocious speed. Specifically noting, his special move is physically impossible for him to actually do. He was so proud of a move, because here's the payoff. Fucking Finroll and Vanessa help him accomplish it. But were they not there, or one of them just happened to not be there, they'd be like, well, that's a fucking great move. You can't fucking do it, so thanks for wasting everyone's goddamn time, Asta, you dickhead. Like, I can't tell if I find it hysterical that that's how dumb Asta is, or if I'm just, like, ashamed, because it's so baffling that he's like, it would be like if he was like, my special move is I shoot fireballs up into the air, then jump up and slam them, and then multiple meteors fall down. Everyone's like, that sounds super cool. You can't shoot fire, though. It's like, why would that impede my ability to do this move?
I don't know. I just think it's stupid.
Well, the move itself is...
I have these two swords. There are, like, thousands of techniques that have been designed around swords, and his idea is to essentially, like, this is the equivalent of there are millions of different ways to use your body that have been developed over the course of martial arts history. I have an idea. I'll charge at the guy like Superman. And that's it. So... I mean, it doesn't even, like, upset me anymore. I just want to acknowledge this is really stupid. But really, is anyone surprised by how stupid this is at this point? Like, if Asta had been like, I have been harnessing my chi and now I'm able to do the EI Kido technique. Just, like, slash through the air and the sonic thrust of his attack carves a chasm through space and time. That's a super special technique. That would be way more shocking and infuriating than this at this point. So they launch him like a missile with their teleportation and thread magic, and he slashes through the dragon mount, and Fauna goes leashed. While it's disintegrating around her.
I blew it!
Fuck. I can't quite tell. No, he definitely didn't hit her. It almost looks like in that panel where she's thinking that it almost looks like he went through her torso.
Yeah, it almost looks like she's...
I mean, very obviously, if you look at the actual impact, he goes beneath her through the dragon and doesn't even touch her. It's just kind of a weird way that the... man is dissipating around
another
her.
Another shot where I'm like, how is that not an upskirt shot?
It is, well, yeah. Man.
It only bothers me because all the fucking skirts are so precariously short that it's like, why don't you just go for it at that point? He's like, no, my mother reads this series. You should have asked to win again, boy! Just taking him over the head with the cane. Why doesn't ask to win again? It's fine, Mom.
So after that, the part that actually annoys me. So naked guy, whatever his name is confronting the Diamond Kingdom elites and he's like, Mars, do you recognize me? Mars doesn't say anything, but the other general who's there is like, oh, wait, that's the guy who used to be our teacher. Okay.
And you'd remember this if you read the Black Clover novel. You're like, yeah. Oh.
So, Ladros is, I guess, the weird face guy's name.
Yeah, I guess one of the generals of the Diamond Kingdom.
Right. He attacks with a fireball. And the former teacher deflects it with what looks like wind magic, which he forms into a sword. And he says that he will defeat them with his magic and atone for his past. Okay.
Can I fucking buy this light novel somewhere so I can just fucking read it and have any idea what's happening? I know that English Jump has absolutely no control over this. Like, they picked this manga. They don't have any control over the fact that this is a light novel that's not available to us. They're not going to just not translate these chapters and be like, whatever, you guys can... Like, I get it. Like, they don't have any control over it. But as a reader, every time this dude shows up or, like, continues to, like... Or other characters within his group continue to do things, I'm still just like... Like, was it that big of a deal over in Japan that this dude is so comfortable waking, like... a B-story plotline within this arc being this entire dude who came from a light novel? Like, it's just, it's surprising to me. Like, you know...
And you can still do that if you have more of an establishing, you know, setup. Like, if they had spent a bit more time with he and the two girls when they met up with them a few chapters ago.
Yeah.
To go over some of the stuff that they had been through together as opposed to, oh yeah... We met you guys in the light novel and had an adventure together. That was some adventure, wasn't it? Yes. And as you know, I have a grudge against Mars. Yes, we do know that.
It's just sort of... I'm not, like, angry. I'm just, like, to the point where I'm just like, can I just read it then? Or can you, like, flashback this stuff and give me some context? Because it's weird how much of this dude and this storyline we're getting without really any... like, context to it. It's just sort of strange. Like, you made a lot of points about the whole Kira thing back in Bleach. But that was, like, one character at the end of a fight that never even really got resolved. That was almost like a tease, like, oh, hey, Kira's back. How did that happen? Well, read this light novel. Whereas this, it's like, hey, this chapter ending, and, hey, for the next couple weeks, we might focus on this guy whose entire story is contained all within a fucking light novel somewhere.
There is, this problem in wrestling. Yeah, it's 8 o'clock. It's time to make a wrestling reference. There's a problem in wrestling.
Nick, it's only 7:55. We're late for the 7:45 wrestling reference.
Where WWE has this thing where they recap everything because they understand that at any moment, somebody who is not familiar with whatever story might be tuning in and may not have been watching for the last TV for the last several weeks, may have missed last week's episode, may have flipped channels and has not seen the beginning of their absurdly long weekly show. So they do recaps and video packages and have the announcers talk about what has happened literally 20 minutes ago. And at times, for the people who are watching it regularly, they're like, oh my god, I get it. You don't have to reiterate this over and over again. But they would prefer to have that repetitive feeling to it because everyone knows what's going on when you do that. And that's a very important thing to do. I mean, I understand now that there is a grudge between these guys, but this feels like it's come out of nowhere. Because I didn't read that novel, because I can't read that novel. And literally, if they had spent like a full chapter with Noelle and everyone else dragging Asta over, they meet up with them, and then they just kind of chill at their place for like a chapter and talk about the stuff that they went through. And they go over, oh yeah, you know, this is where he came from. This is her deal. This is her deal. That would have fixed literally all of this. And that is all I'm asking for, is if you want this moment and this fight to have dramatic weight to it, then don't leave all of us out of the loop.
Mm-hmm. And again, I don't have my finger on the pulse of Japanese culture. I don't know how many people read the Black Clover light novel in Japan. It might be that a large portion of the Black Clover manga audience has read that novel. And for them, this is no issue. And maybe for them, they're like, hey, it's better that we don't go over everything again, because for them, it'd be re-explained. There's the whole Stan Lee phrase of, like, every comic somebody's first, and that, yeah, as you're saying, of just re-explain it just to be safe. But it's just more so, it's just this weird thing that for us, again, as English readers, and I know English Jump has no control over this, it's just this thing where this dude keeps coming up, and all these elements from that light novel keep coming up, and we're just still sitting there like, all right, I'll follow along, but I have no idea. It might as well be the same character as, like, from Ruby, where I'm just like, I have no context for this stuff. You're just introducing me to these things as they come up. I'll be honest, I didn't even mind this part so much. It was weird to me. At first, I thought it was really confusing because he summoned a sword, and I was like, wait, this dude has the same fucking power as Asta? And now it's really pissed. It's like, wait, this dude from a fucking light novel has the same power as Asta? It seems like a big deal. But I realized,
I have
like,
the Six Clover book.
But no, I just realized his sword makes win. The thing for me, though, was that this was not necessarily a defeat, because she could still be around, but this was the scene being of Fauna. And I was like...
This isn't... Kind of just happened really easily, didn't it?
You know, everything seems to. But it's the sense of, like, you know, one of the four elemental spirits was already beaten. I mean, I get it. It's Asta. It's what his sword does. But it's also just that sense of, like, it just didn't feel very interesting. I think only because we've seen this. Like, this is the Veto fight all over again. Straight down to, you know, the person is defeated because Finral and Vanessa use a team-up attack with Astra to help him move forward when he physically couldn't otherwise attack this person. Like, it's, I know it's, you know, in a small way different, but it feels very similar. Like, I just wish if they had gone this route that there had maybe been another member of the Black Bulls helping with their magic to alter things up just slightly. Cause it is kind of weird that it's those two characters again being the ones that help him move.
Yeah. Forward. And, Fauna was supposed to be on the same like level as Veto. So it's weird that if they win this skirmish with her, it's weird that they did it so easily when it took way more to take Veto down.
So. Again, there's nothing saying she's actually defeated, and I assume she's not, because it's not like she's completely made peace with everything yet, and there's the whole, like, your brother is Mars sort of thing that I still expect to have answered at some point. But it did just feel like, huh, like, I thought the four elemental spirits were supposed to be kind of a big deal since, you know, Sylph being part of Yuno's book was kind of made to be a pretty big deal, and then she didn't have like a crazy magic when they introduced her as one of the three Midnight Suns. She just had the fire elemental salamander. I was like, okay, maybe that'll be a big deal in and of itself. We shall see. But I feel like at this point, this was really like almost my thoughts on this chapter could have just been cut and paste from the chapter after Veto was beaten, where you grab the same thoughts, because it felt very much the same as that time.
Yeah. And it's weird that, I mean, aside from the inclusion of Magna and Luck, it really is kind of the same thing. You know, you have Noelle using your sea dragon, and then that's not the finishing blow, but it does a lot of damage. And then you have Asta teaming with Vanessa and Finral. Mm-hmm. You know, all that's missing is Yami showing up at the end and saying, don't worry.
I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't show up at this point. But again, I'm not trying to like poop on the series or anything like that. I'm just noting that it's hard for me to get super pumped up right now, because one half of the chapter I feel like I've read before, and the other half of the chapter I'm like, I still don't know who this guy is. Why is he wearing clothes now? His one distinguishing feature has been lost to me.
Oh God.
Alright, Nick, what's our next series? I swear to God, if it's
it's The Promised Neverland.
Oh, alright, I can dig it.
Chapter 17, The Secret Room and William Minerva 2. Last time...
Is it just going to become like World Trigger, where it's just like, William Minerva, part 36?
Yeah. Last time, the main three kids were talking about William Minerva, this seeming benefactor who had hidden messages in several books in the library, while... Also, Don and Gilda went off on their own to try and investigate the secret room that Mom communicates to with the monsters in. So we begin with Don and Gilda, and they find a secret door behind a bookcase. Well, Gilda finds a secret door behind the bookcase, because Don's just like, what if I just lift it all away? And she's just like, oh my God, have you never, like, watched any Scooby-Doo?
That's heathen talk. Those kids solve mysteries. Why would Mom let us watch this?
Well, there's five of the kids. Let me see here. There's five kids. Which members of the Scooby gang would they be?
I guess... Well, I was going to say, like, they don't really have, like, a dark, angsty one that would be... I guess the closest he'd pick is Mama. He'd be like, Emma would be Fred. Daphne, yeah. I guess. Daphne, I guess, would be Norman then, by proximity of just, like, the connection with Fred. But now he's not like, I don't fucking know. After that, it really falls apart. Because I'm like, Ray could be Velma, I guess, but Ray's such a dick. Velma isn't.
Depends on which version, I guess, you're watching. Like, yeah. There's the Mysteries, Inc. version, which basically made the characters, you know, funny. That's a great cartoon.
I'm comparing it specifically to the pup named Scooby-Doo version of the camera.
Pup named Scooby-Doo version? when Velma's legs ran.
she had that great fucking dance where she just did the...
Look, the Peanuts dance? Yeah.
But I don't, that was my first exposure to it mostly because I didn't watch a lot of Peanuts as a kid. So every time I watched it, I was like, Mom, what is Velma doing? Is that actually a dance? Does that count?
Some people shit on Pup Named Scooby-Doo, but honestly, like, that's the first series that really helped to define, like, a lot of the ways that people look at him now. Like, you know, realizing that Fred could kind of be an arrogant douchebag and Daphne could really benefit from just being a rich bitch.
Yeah, but that's, like, the fun, like...
And making Velma, of course, the primary solver of stuff.
Yeah. It was also, I think, helped because it came in at that point where... Because I don't know if Cartoon Network made... Like, I don't know if, like, their studios made it or if it's just something inherited later on, but it came at that point where the people making Hanna-Barbera cartoons or cartoons off the Hanna-Barbera properties had gotten enough of, like, a sense of time separated from it that they were able to make fun of it. Like, that's the whole Harvey Birdman thing. It was basically making fun of most of those shows. And yeah. I feel like Pup Named Scooby-Doo was able to have a little bit more self-awareness of what it was and had fun.
Well, they had a character named Red Herring that was recurring in it. Fred was constantly like, Red Herring!
It's him! It's Red Herring! Except
the one episode where he promised not to accuse him. He's like, who do you think I think it is? And I'm not going to say, it actually was.
And it's just him so furious at the end. People like, wait.
I knew it!
I thought you were talking about the promised Neverland! I'm talking about a pup named Scooby-Doo now. Stay in step.
They're discovering clues right now. Jinkies! Emma said jinkies, it must be a clue. Don, will you go into the secret room for a Scooby snack? How about an ultra deluxe Scooby snack? Anyway. So, Don and Gilda go in through the secret door. We cut back to Emma's group, where more wacky expressions get made. It's just such a weird thing to be having a Promised Neverland now. Because Emma's pointing out this thing, this label, and no one's like, oh, what is this? And she's like, a book label!
I like how she explains it too. Like, it's a book label! A label that indicates the owner of a book! You know we're all the top score in our class, right?
Yeah. And Bray is just like, shut up. She points out that, there's, because the label is this circle surrounding an owl, and I think the owl might be wearing a monocle, I'm not sure.
Or got punched in the face. It's got one black eye.
But, he points out that the circle is different on each of the labels, because it's actually Morse code. It's a series of dots and dashes that go in a circle, in a ring. And they say words like run, down, danger, monster, farm. So Emma says, yeah, I mean, this looks like it's a series of warnings, from them. And Ray actually says, well, these books actually came from outside. So I think that we can actually trust that these were actually made by someone from the outside. They're not an effort to trick us. But he expresses caution because, all right, so this guy might be on our side, but hey, we don't even know if the guy's still alive anymore. So, or what his motivations for wanting to warn us about this place are, so, for that matter. But Norman is encouraged by this, the fact that, well, someone actually did try and give us this warning from the outside. That means that there's someone on the outside who knows about the existence of the farms, which gives him hope. They talk about when some of them are, and so the weirdest one is thing is that apparently Emma and Gota have been really fucking busy. She's just went through every book in this guy. Because she's like, we found these two suspicious books. This one doesn't have a message, like, at all. And this one says, promise. Like, promise Neverland.
Promise Neverland is ending next week. I'm like, well, that's disappointing.
God damn it.
And out of nowhere.
Very, very surprising, too, considering all those color pages getting in the last few weeks.
Yeah, Bakugan showed us. If you want to end it in your time, you do it.
That's true, yeah. But that one, you know, a couple hundred chapters. Emma says that she thinks that these two books will be an important guide. And Rey is like, and that is based on my hunch. Rey's just like, just, again, like, it's so weird that we had, like, 12 chapters of very serious, very dark stuff. You know, child farms with demons eating kids. And now we have more lighthearted little diversions from that with them making wacky faces at each other. I'm not upset with it, but just kind of surprising. Back with Dawn and Gilda, they manage to get inside of the secret room. They discover that there is a hatch leading into a basement, and this is the actual area where Mom contacts people from. There's a radio, but the first thing that they see is that there are all these toys scattered all over the place. They recognize the bunny that was left behind the star of the series, but all the other toys, too. And they're kind of freaked out because they're like, well, but all these kids actually had their toys. You know, Connie was the only one who left her bunny behind. All the other kids actually had them when they were leaving. So that means that they were actually taken from them when they left. So Don and Gilda are kind of like, what? This doesn't quite all match up, though. You know, Don's like, how did Emma and Norman actually know that they were bad people taking the kids away? Like, right when they saw them, taking Connie out. Do you think that they've actually been hiding the truth from us? Do you think that we can actually save Connie and our siblings? Oh. Or, you know, basically, they don't actually say it out loud, but like, or are they, you know, did they see them get killed? Unfortunately for them, it's time for Mom to go and contact the monsters. The guy, they weren't checking their watches, I guess. it's time, it's 8 o'clock. It's time for her to make her rest.
The monsters. Y'all remember that time Kane got the fucking nutshotted and Schoolboy Rolled Up by Rene Dupree? What cray cray was that? They're like, stop calling us about this.
She's actually contacting them because she's the anonymous Raw General Manager. Gotta email Michael Cole.
Boo-boo. Hey guys, when's Shawn Benjamin coming back? He got hurt.
He had like return of Inez for him like 2 months ago. He's, like, he's injured, God.
They found an injury. We told you this for months.
Why didn't you guys just put the cruiserweights on SmackDown?
Stop asking us as though we control it!
Oh, boy.
Are we ever going to bring back Crime Time? No!
No! JTG sucked!
Stop it! Stop it!
They're horribly racist. Also sexist, considering that they fucking ended Lita's career by selling her panties and vibrator. That was so fucking weird.
Good old wrestling.
Yep. Anyway, so, yeah, they're in danger of being caught by Ma, and that's where the chapter ends. An alright chapter, kind of taking the turns that you would sort of expect at this point, but I guess we're gonna learn more about William Nerva in the future, And, yeah, we'll see if Don and Gilda suddenly graduate. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the... I feel like this is almost like a trademark necessity in any of these kind of, like, thriller stories. There has to be a scene where the heroes discover something, like, incriminating about the bad guy, but then the bad guy, like, walks into the room and they have to hide, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
All right. So, next, then, is My Hero Academia.
All right. Dig that. There.
Yeah. So last time Bakugo said that he had to discuss with Deku about his quirk. It's now chapter number 117 to talk about your quirk. They're going to talk about Deku's quirk. You get that? Yeah. Everyone following along?
I think I picked up some of the interesting subtext in that title.
Quirks means powers.
Yeah.
So they're going to talk about Deku's powers.
A talk would be
not his character quirk. Yeah. Not his character quirk, but his in-universe term for powers quirk.
Yeah. A talk is a conversation between two people.
People are humans. People are humans.
A is an article sometimes used to help establish how many of something there are. 117 is the chapter number, which means that prior to this, there have been 116 episodes of fucking superhero, whatever.
Not counting bonuses and spinoffs and turn back the pendulums and.
Anyway, great chapter this week, guys. Let's move on to Fairy Tale or whatever the fuck's next.
Bakugo and Deku head outside late at night. I like the little bit we have, the few establishing shots that we get, some of the other students of 1A. You know, we've got Kirishima just kind of drooling a little bit. Yairozu looking somehow elegant while fast asleep. Todoroki just kind of passed out. And then Ida with this giant snot bubble coming out of his tongue.
Words can't express how jealous I am of that fucker right now. I'm just like, God, I wish I could get a good night's sleep. This motherfucker's so content in life, he's fucking blowing enormous
bubbles. Despite the fact he's so ridiculously congested, it's amazing.
Yeah.
That is a lot of mucus that poor boy is dealing with.
I'm not one to be like, hey, you know, everybody needs to be represented, but I do definitely feel like there's a very real lack of representation of those with sleep apnea in manga today. Why couldn't one of those fucking kids have a big old sleep apnea machine or whatever? Why isn't there a Burger King Kids Club member for me, Nick? Where's my wheels? Where's my Jerome or whatever racist name they gave the black kid who played basketball?
Anyway, so Bakugo and Deku have met up outside, but Bakugo's not saying anything yet. Instead, he's leading Deku away from the dorm. And it's paralleled with a scene from when they were kids walking together, Deku still trailing behind Bakugo. And they reach Ground Beta, where they had their first fight during battle training. And Bakugo admits that he's felt pretty crappy about that ever since. That's a long time to hold on to a grudge. That's like 100 chapters ago. Jesus. Bakugo just, you know, recaps the fact that he's... Not only has Deku essentially caught up with him, he's kind of leaving him behind. Because he's got his own quirk now. He used to be this kid that he could just look down on, but he's been getting gradually stronger and stronger. He saved him from the sludge villain at the beginning of the series. Now he's got a provisional license and Bakugo doesn't. And Deku tries to cut in and say, well, you know, that doesn't have to do with, you know, our abilities. Just shut up! Listen! And he says he realizes that Deku got his power from All Might. And Deku isn't admitting it because All Might told him not to. Bakugo explains very succinctly how he figured this out. Which was, you know, that super villain guy. He can take quirks away and he can give quirks to people too. So then there are all the Nomu that have multiple quirks. So, I think that they're connected, and I think then that All Might must have been able to transfer his power to you. So, yeah. Also, there was that one thing that he said, it's your turn, when he was pointing to the camera. You're the only one who understood him differently. And also, All Might wouldn't tell me what the hell was going on, so I'm going to you instead. And Deku is not saying anything. He's not denying it, but he's not saying anything. So Bakugo essentially realizes that this is the truth. Bakugo says that he thought, I've got this punk I thought was a pebble in my map, and all of a sudden he's getting recognized by the guy I admire, which is why we're going to fight here and now. And Deku says, we don't have to fight. And even if we are going to fight, we should spar in a training room. And Bakugo says, well, if we fight all out here, then nobody can stop us. So show me what it is about you that made All Might want to bring you this far. And, Deku, of course, doesn't want to do it while Bakugo's warming up. And he explodes forward and starts to launch attacks at him. And, the fight's on as the chapter ends.
It's an interesting chapter, I think. I like what we get out of Bakugo here. He's one of the more interesting characters in Jump to me, because he on the surface feels like he should be very similar to characters we've had in the past, but I can't think of a character before who's ever been like Bakugo. And how angry and, like, kind of bitter he is, and almost petty at times. Yet at the same time, he's just not entirely unsympathetic. Like, there's a side of me that still, like, kind of sees it from his vantage point. Like, he's not an anti-hero completely, but he's not a hero either. He just fits this weird mold that always kind of intrigues me, because it always seems like at one moment it could switch to one side or the other, and just hasn't yet. Like, he doesn't fit firmly into any one place except as an antagonist for Deku. And I like seeing him and Deku's relationship start to change. At least it's not as outright, like, almost like abusive as it was before. Like, you think back to when he was teaming up with Deku to fight All Might back in the one exam a whole while back. It's not quite like that anymore. Even though he doesn't speak positively of him at all, there does seem to be at least some modicum of respect here, and it does seem like he's trying to basically gauge essentially what makes Deku so worthy, at least in All Might's eyes. And it's just unique to see it from this perspective of Bakugo, as such a high ideal and high expectation of what All Might was and is, and seeing that then, now he can confirm, has been all placed with Zai Deku, who's somebody who's always kind of hated because it's someone who's weak, which just goes completely against the ideals that Bakugo has, that heroes are powerful, heroes are those that are strong. So it's just a unique kind of setup.
And it's weird, because you'd think that with a confrontation like this would be all about how Bakugo is just jealous of Deku. He wants to like fight him and to prove that he's stronger than him. But there's something that you can only really gain from seeing the artwork in this chapter. Because Bakugo is drawn in a way that we haven't really seen him drawn before. You can tell that this is not a decision that he's come to rationally. Like, he just got pissed off that he didn't pass the Hero Vision. It's like, that's the last straw. I'm going to go kick Deku's ass and prove that I'm better than him. This is something that he's been thinking about for a long time. And there were a series of things that made him change the way that he's looking at Deku, primarily in his interactions with All Might. And when you see his face when he says, you have to show me, you're going to show me what it is about you that made All Might want to take you this far. And if it turns out your way of looking up to him has been right all this time, that means I was doing it all wrong. It almost seems as though when you look at his face, like he already knows that he's been a piece of shit for a while. Like, he's coming to that realization already, and this is him trying to come to grips with that. He's trying to just figure out, okay, this will prove, at the very least, this will resolve things for me. I'll know what's going on, I'll know what's right and what's wrong again after this, or at least in his own mind, that's what he thinks of it as. So he's in the process of making this change, and we've noted like how Bakugo is this very angry character to the point where he's comedically angry a lot of the time, but also he's a pretty big jerk. He's a pretty big jerk. And I think that he's realizing that now. And that's what I like about this confrontation, is that half of it is told in just the faces that he's making. Because he's not glaring down at Deku being like, oh, how did a piece of shit like you ever gain All Might's confidence? He's like, how did you gain All Might's confidence? I want to know. Because he doesn't get it because he's a kid. An angry kid.
Yeah. It's 8:25, Nick, which means it's time for our 8:25 Pokemon reference. He's like Silver from Gold and Silver, the game. He's starting to realize that it's not all about just capturing the strongest Pokemon. And before long, Nick, he's going to have a Crobat, which is going to prove that he's changed. And he's starting to care for his Pokemon.
We got a conversation carrying out. Hey, Bakugo and stuff. And I want to impress upon you guys that, like, I don't want you to count on this ending one way. Like, I would not put it past Horikoshi to have this fight resolve nothing or just be another step in the path. Like, this seems like it could be a climax to the relationship between Deku and Bakugo, and then after this, they have a different dynamic going forward. But it could very well just be something that just continues a progression that Bakugo has been having. Because, you know, if Bakugo just stops being a jerk, how much character development is there left for him to have? So, yeah, we'll see.
All right, what's up next?
All right. That's done. Fairy Tail.
Oh, I mean, yay! Fairy Tail. Chapter 512. Sting, the White Shadow Dragon. So if you recall last time, Licarde? Is that his name? Or am I just imagining a name in Fairy Tail? Licarde, the guy with the pleasure power. Am I going crazy?
Licarde, yeah.
Licarde, okay. I thought I had the name right. Licarde was battling Sting. Sting was using his light dragon magic to essentially eat it, but he couldn't hurt him. So Rogue gave him his shadow magic, and he combined it together to become the White Shadow Dragon Slayer. And that's what this chapter kind of continues off of. Sting says, "Don't write me off! Let's see how you like my and Rogue's power combined, the essence of Saber!" And I'm like, Natsu? All right, no, you're Sting. You just look identical to Natsu a lot of the time.
The most influential person in Sabretooth. Fairy Tail.
So he punches him in the face. They have a little bit of a back and forth, but essentially it boils down to the fact that because Sting's white magic dragon slaying thing allows him to eat Licarde's magic, and Rogue's black dragon magic allows him to hurt him, it's a good combo to fight against him. But Licarde can't be defeated so easily. Like, he can't be boiled down that easily, defeated by such paltry powers, in his own words. So he uses the hunger for eternal sleep, rest in peace! And suddenly, Rogue and Sting both feel the urge to just fall into a wistful, dreamful... Yeah, now, that's a lie, obviously. I can't fall asleep. There's a mask grafted to my face, apparently. Sting starts punching himself in the fucking ribs to wake up, which I find humorous because he's apparently punching himself so hard that his, like, fucking skin is just erupting with blood. Like, it's not even like he punches himself like, ow, or like he stabs himself. It's just that he's punching himself so hard his fucking wounds are exploding outwards, which I don't know why I love that visual so much. But Licarde explains, he's like, humans cannot help but succumb to their hungers. Even Acrologia shares that weakness. Thus, I am the only one who can defeat him. The ultimate wizard with my orgasm and sleepy magics.
You're just imagining, like, Agnologia burst through the doors of Fairy Tale. It's like, Xerath, I'm here to finish the... Hang on a second.
So sleepy.
Take this sandwich and this box of Kleenex and this pillow, and I'll be right back.
Maybe just fall asleep really quick here with all my defenses let down. Like, what a brilliant head. So Rogue's starting to kind of, or Sting's starting to pass out, and Rogue tells him to enter his inner shadow, which he's like, I can't do it. How am I supposed to? And Rogue's like, real gravity. Let gravity bring you into it. And that's when Kagura shows back up. You're like, all right, you were here. And she's like, gravity is my specialty. And I'm like, is it? I don't even remember what you people do.
I thought you were just a swords girl.
I thought you were the slightly more conservative version of Urza. So she uses her gravity magic, I guess, and sinks Sting into the fucking shadow. And he's like, oh, my senses are heightened here. I can feel everything. And this is a combined tech from me and Rogue and Kagura. And he does this fucking, like, puppet string on each finger. Hakue Ryo no Ashigiru! Which means I'm not going to attempt to read that. Probably White Dragon, Lighty, Shadow, Slashy movie. And apparently he's won. Like, the card is like, oh, thud, thud. Fucking, like, he hits the ground, like, twice, like a fucking Street Fighter character, just to let you know he's been beaten, like, bump, bump, ugh. And, next chapter, Sting's gonna beat up a car for bonus points. But he's like, now you're the one who's gonna take a nap! And you just see the car on the ground, like, father! Cut away. No time for that anymore. And it's Xerath drinking at a bar or something like that. And we cut then back inside to Natsu's heart. Because we just spend time there. And essentially, just to sum up, Natsu's scarf is made out of
the scales. It's weird that like, we get through that fight, it's like, oh yes, another one of the 12 has finally been defeated, it's just like, whatever. And even the manga itself is treating them as an afterthought at this point. It's like, one of the really strong Spring 12 members has been defeated! Anyway, let's go finish on more stupid backstory and finish on the note of, Lucy, you have to get naked.
So yeah, essentially they talk about how Natsu's scarf is made out of Igno's scales, and Igno was a red dragon, so why is the scarf white? Well, the scarf turns white over time because scales eventually lose their power, but apparently people can't hold them because it's impossible for them to do it. Once the color's faded, then it becomes possible for people to do it. So the only person who could fucking knit such a fucking magnificent, stupid goddamn scarf as this was fucking Lucy's mother, Anna, who's... I feel like she hasn't served a role in the story yet, except to be, like, that Easter egg who just shows up at places. Like, oh, hey, did you know that this person who did this thing? That was Lucy's mom! Whoa! Like, she hasn't felt relevant to the story yet. It's just, like...
April named the Ninja Turtles and gave them pizza!
Yeah, it's just, like, this thing that happens at points to, like, connect things to the story. And just, like, whatever, who cares? They talk about how Anna's fucking kind and all this nonsense, but then, I think it's actually, yeah, Xerath is the one who's telling him this. He's like, Anna was very kind and caring, but now your death is quickly approaching and your final answer is within reach. Cut! It's all the people staring above fucking Natsu, and medical doctor lady is like, his body temperature keeps dropping! Lucy, strip off all your clothes! And you're like, there are four other people here. Why is this the one thought that
no,
gets...
No. She has to provide her body heat so that he'll warm up. It's like, there are a ton of you, and you are wizards. You can just cast heat magic on him.
Hold on. Does Lucy have anyone who could just make fire, too? Like, I feel like she has to have one fucking stellar spirit who has fire powers.
Even if they don't, there's a bunch of them. They can build a fire, and it will do a much better job of warming up.
I'm like, wait, does she have Ares, which, like, is a fucking rain, or, like, sheep that could just cover him in wool? Alright, there's a lot of things that are weird with this. That's one. Two, she doesn't actually take off her clothes. Like, it's just a line that
No, because they get interrupted. It's like, and she's, like, going along with it, just like, yeah, okay, I'll save him if I can make it. And it's like, Lucy, this man will die unless he gets an emergency injection of Double D. You can trust me, I'm a doctor.
I love Josh being in the chat. Lucy's mom made the Millennium items. yeah, it's just like this weird line.
Lucy's mom made the Namekian Dragon.
And, Happy starts crying because he's like, I don't want you to kill Zarek because then you'll die too. And I don't want you to die. And he's crying nonstop about how sad this is. And that's essentially where the chapter ends. Like, you see Gray kind of laying on the ground, contemplative as well. But it's really, this is one of the things that's always stood out to Fairy Tail to me, in that it really has no ability to transition between its humor and its drama. Because, like, you know, other manga do this. Like, One Piece has done this frequently, usually to pretty successful results. Usually because, I guess, the goofiness isn't addressed so much. Like, it happens in, like, a weird moment, and then there's enough of, like, kind of a separation between the two that it works. Here, it's just like, Lucy, take off all your clothes! Okay. And then she starts to, and it's like, hard stop. Fucking Happy. Start crying. Your friend's gonna die.
It's shifting gears without a clutch, you know? Just, yeah. Jesus.
This was a pretty not good chapter, if only because, like, he may not be done, you know? In fact, there's probably more evidence to say he's not done, but if this is the way Licardi goes out, this is a fucking lame fucking character. Like, all the big deal made about how the Spriggan 12, like, oh, a lot of them sucked, but these three were a big deal. And this dude went out like a fucking punk to Sting, of all people, without doing anything. Like, the fact he's related to Natsu is inconsequential, by and large. He hasn't done anything more special than that. He didn't do anything on his way out. It's not like he killed anybody or left any, like, dramatic lasting impact or anything like that. He just showed up, curb stomped a couple people, like the lamest members of Fairy Tail with orgasm magic, then got beaten by fucking Sting, Rogue,
and Kaguya. Not the lamest members of
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't even fucking Fairy Tail he managed to get. Sonic couldn't be there. Yeah, if that's what this dude is essentially going to end up being, then it's a huge letdown, because it's just like, what was the point? Like, why even give this guy a Dragneel name and add that whole thing to him if this is all he's going to mount up to? Again, he might not. He might have a whole lot more. This might only be, you know, stage one in his three-phase fight, but as it is right now, I'm just sitting there like, meh. Like, I talked about it before. I'm like, I'm kind of glad Sting had a fight, but I wish it had been against someone more insignificant than this dude who's kind of built up to be a big deal. Like, I wish at least a major member of the Fairy Tail universe had been the one to take him down, like Laxus or something like that, so you could at least feel something there, but...
Next chapter, Sting looks deep into Lucario's eyes and sees how serious.
Oh yeah, he's like,
you... That is the thing. We keep on forgetting about that. But honestly, that one moment will mean that Sting can never be a badass. He just gave up.
It is maybe one of the lamest moments of Fairy Tail. Just like, I give up, even though I'm in my badass streak. You all so battered and broken came before me, and I just, I give up. I'm tapping. It's like, I fucking hate you so much. You dragon slayers just keep getting progressively lamer. Alright, what's up next?
Ole Galasso. So we'll go over this one fairly quickly, considering that you didn't read it. It's
about soccer.
It's a soccer series.
Handball, as they call it on the other side of the Prime Meridian.
That is not correct.
It is 100% accurate. They play it in fall, and the net is actually made out of old twine that tiny Nicaraguan children bind together. And it's a sport that unites those two great countries. Nicaragua and everything that side of the Prime Meridian.
I'm sorry, this is another tangent. Chris Jericho made a guest appearance on Whose Line Is It Anyway a few months ago, and that's like the regular thing for the new version of Whose Line Is It Anyway, is that they get, you know, a B-list celebrity to show up and they do a couple of sketches in the episode and that they don't do anything else. But they did a couple of really funny things with them. Like, they did one of their song things where they, you know, just like, okay, you know, here's a topic and here's a joke. Now Wayne Brady and someone else sing the song. And so they did a song about how sensitive Chris Jericho is, and Gary Anthony Williams, a.k.a. Bebop in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, said that Chris Jericho is so sensitive that he can only wear shirts that are knitted by Korean children living in Cuba. Don't question it. Thought that was good.
Fair enough.
Korean children living in Cuba. That's a great one. Anyway, so Bonba is our hero in this soccer series, and he is a Taekwondo junior champion who has been banned from Taekwondo for essentially all of his high school time. Like, he's going into high school, and he's banned from Taekwondo for 3 years. So he's like, oh, fuck. Can't do anything then. So for a while, he's just like, okay, well, I'll just take advantage of the fact that I'm not going to do athletics. That means I'll have free time. I'll dedicate to studies. I'll just relax. He's trying to make the most of it, which I like, because, you know, so often he was like, I can't do this anymore. You know, remember Cross Manage, that was all about, I can't do this anymore, so I'm just going to be horribly depressed.
That's why it touched me so deeply.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was definitely very dramatically.
What's with all these characters with gumption in the face of adversity? Why don't they just give up and contemplate ending it all every day? Fucking unrelatable dickheads.
So it's nice to have this guy who's just like, all right, well, I'll make the best of it. He's obviously has regrets, but he's like, okay, whatever. He ends up meeting this girl who is the manager of the soccer club, and she ends up roping him into going out for soccer, because I don't even know exactly how. Essentially, he's this giant muscular guy. And so she's like, Jesus Christ, you are absurdly fit. Look at your fucking calf and quad muscles. Yeah, you'd be great for soccer. And I'm sure that you're perfect. You're great at kicking. And he's like, damn right I am. I was the national champ. I represented Japan overseas. Of course, she doesn't realize that he's referring to him being a Taekwondo representative. She's like, oh, you were a national representative soccer. And so she ropes him into, you know, going into this soccer tryout to have a practice match.
Tangent here, Nick, but that just reminded me of something that I find funny. So that assumption she has made because of his size and everything like that, she assumed he was a good player. My older brother, Michael, is 6'3", so very tall. Mm-hmm. And right. One of his friends was part of like a local, like amateur football league, like friendly kind of football league. And that guy saw how tall my brother was. It was like, could you play wide receiver for us? Because you're taller than most people. You're going to naturally be a good wide receiver. Mikey tried to explain to him, like, hey, I'm not very good at coordination. Just the little dark secret of the Larios men is that we're not very coordinated at playing sports. Like, we're not very good at catching things. We're very goobery when that comes to happen. And this guy's like, nah, dude, like, you're that tall. It's not going to matter if you're not the greatest, like, receiver. Like, you can't catch the best. You'll be fine. So they have him out there for one practice. Every ball that goes his way, he butterfingers through, like, whoa! Like, 6 or 7 times in a row. They just stop passing him to him completely. And the next time my brother saw the guy, he's like, hey, is there another practice that I need to go to? They're like, ah, oh, yeah.
Nope, never again.
No, the league got canceled or something like that. Like, just denied it. Never called to invite him back. It was like that harsh reality. It's like, yeah, I guess you can be 6'3" and still suck ass at this game.
I mean, like, I'm not as tall as you or your brother. And literally someone, when I was in high school, said, I think that you might actually, you know, have a chance at, like, playing wide receiver because it was high school and our football team sucked. But immediately I was just like, no, that's a bad idea.
You're like, are there any black kids on this team at all? Or is that why you're coming down to me? Come on, guys.
Okay, put it this way. One of the reasons why we didn't get, like, written up for having too many white kids was because we instead had Asian and Indian kids at the school.
You were just like, you fools, haven't you read Ice Shield 21 at all? We need the muscles of the black man.
There were black kids at the school, but we were in a pretty good neighborhood.
So they were all like Wayne Brady, like, oh, I'll catch that pass. You're like, stop dancing. can't do it. My heart tells me to.
We get a bit of Bamba's backstory, and the reason why he was actually banned from Taekwondo is because although he did really well in nationals individually, his team was full of goobers, and they worked their asses off. It's a lot like, Mizumachi in Aisho 21, where, you know, there was this tall, really talented guy on an entire squad of guys who just weren't very good. So these guys, you know, dedicated their entire junior high career trying to get better so that they could go to nationals together, but as a team, they failed. Because they dragged Bamba's score down. They were really broken up about it, and so they got mocked. They were like, oh, but if it were just a team of Bambas, they would probably be great, but look at those losers. They probably didn't even try. No, I think it's even more pathetic. I bet they did try, and they failed anyway. So Bamba just went berserk and just started beating the shit out of them for mocking his friends, and that was why he got banned from Taekwondo. So eventually we actually get to the soccer match, and, of course, Bamba has no fucking idea how to play. He has no idea what positions to be in, how to cooperate with his teammates, and every time that the ball gets to him, he just kicks it as fucking hard as he can and launches up into the sky and it crashes into somebody's car and so on and so forth. And eventually, the girl, whose name I haven't even bothered to learn to this point, realizes he's a total beginner. He has no idea how to play soccer. All the clothes that he's wearing are like, you know, he looks like a complete goober who learns what to wear from watching TV and stuff. So Bamba freaks out and is like, oh man, I don't want, you know, her to get mad at me and call me a liar and stuff. I've got to try and do something here. And I don't know how she ends up discovering this, but she looks on her phone and just looks up who he is. And this guy is, oh wow, he was a representative in Japan. Look at him with this fucking trophy. And we get this narration, which is that, you know, over the years, soccer has changed. Modern soccer is about strategy. It's a game of chess. Techniques evolve to take down the king, Pele, to vanquish the god, Maradona. It takes the game to its limits. But sometimes there are men who defy this. And so there's a phrase used only by soccer lovers, one you won't find in the dictionary. Some say it's just an exclamation. In modern soccer, when a player ignores the carry laid out opposing defense, goes for a goal, and gets a super goal, it's golazo. Which I've never heard of before, but I'm not a soccer fan, so I'll take your word for it. I won't bother looking it up, and I'll just believe you.
Nick, as a proud American...
He kicks the ball really hard and he scores, is the point.
As a proud American, can we put these into terms I understand? Like, he has the techniques involved to take down the King Brady and to vanquish the god, like, Unitas.
And right.
When you just don't even bother trying to get through the defense and you just pass it really far downfield, you call that a super touchdown or the yes. NFL blitz strategy. Did you ever play NFL blitz on the N64?
Not on the N64. I did play it on in a couple of arcade machines, though. I think that is a stupid game.
I love that game. I love it because you could just pile drive your fucking opponents after the play is done for like 3 straight seconds. But my plan every down in that game was run 30 yards straight back and just hail fucking Mary across the field. It almost always worked.
You've got to get like 30 yards to get a first down anyway. You might. Fucking well.
Yeah, it all worked out for me.
The point of this, of course, is that Bamba gets excited about soccer and he has fun with it, so of course he's going to go into soccer. I don't know. There are so many soccer manga that just don't work out. I mean, it's when it comes to sports manga, the two most common that get dropped immediately seem to be baseball and soccer, because those are, you know, the most, I guess, popular sports over in Japan.
I think they're also the most relatable. Like, I had to imagine mm-hmm. there was an aversion to doing American football, not because it just wasn't popular in Japan, but also they're like, hey, outside of the U.S., this thing isn't all that crazy popular. Who's going to relate to this? Whereas baseball...
Aisho 21, during the course of its run, doubled the popularity of American football in Japan. That is how not a thing it was and how popular the series was that it actually influenced the the perception of the sport as a whole.
Yeah, but whereas baseball and soccer, those are probably the two most universal sports in the world.
I mean,
America's the only place where soccer isn't a huge deal.
Right. Basketball is probably just a little bit behind them, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think it's a matter of, kids can easily access baseball and soccer and basketball. You just need a place to play and a ball and sometimes gloves and bats. That's all you need, as opposed to football. It's like, well, you better be very careful not to murder unless you've got all this expensive equipment and padding and body armor. But, God, there are so many gimmicky soccer series that I've seen bits of. There's a series called Deweese Soul, which had a main character who played barefoot. This one, the main character is a former judo player. There are so many gimmicks for it because, I don't know, I think that people are kind of bored with soccer at this point.
Next.
So that you need something. And even if you do, it just doesn't seem to work out 90% of the time.
I'm going to pitch a new soccer manga to you right now.
Okay.
All right. Main character is kind of a shabby-looking dude. Not too popular with the ladies. But he's excessively skilled at soccer because in his body is the channeled spirit of a soccer legend who also was a dinosaur. So, like, in all those scenes where, like, the spirit has to coach the kid, it's a fucking, like, little dinosaur, like a T-Rex, who's just like, do it! Rah! It, like, starts eating people. Like, it can't actually eat them because it's a ghost, but you still see him, like, going down to devour people. And that's when the kid's like, yeah, I do need to score this goal. I'm going to call it Dinosaur on Field. It's not a great title. Field Dino. Raptor. Soccer. Raptor ball! There it is!
Fifth draft. Get it out.
No more works needed. Put it right to print. Someone contact Mr. Jump. He's like, Yash, I thought I told you to stop taking messages from those boys at the podcast.
Am I a pirate or am I Scottish?
Yeah, it's hard to hear with these headphones on at times.
I don't know. I mean, like, I kind of liked this first chapter.
Oh, Jurassic Goal is such a better name! Annalisa, but it was too late. It's already going into publishing as Raptor Ball.
So, I don't know if we're going to see much more of Oleg, honestly. I expect that we'll get the 3 Jumpstart chapters, and in 3 months we'll probably hear that it ended. Best of luck to it. I mean, I would not mind seeing more if it does continue. But I have to approach literally every sports series that we come across with, like, I don't know if this is going to work mentality. So,
I don't think there's been, since they started doing Jumpstarts, I don't think there's been a sports series that lasted.
Not one that stuck, no.
Yeah, I mean, the last one to basically stick in the magazine was Haikyuu, and that started like a little bit before they started doing Jumpstarts in the English magazine.
It depends on how you perceive Straighten Up, if you think of that as a sports manga. Or not. It kind of is.
I guess it fits into that weird middle ground there that could fit.
But, other than that, no. Like, there was a, what was it, All Blue or something like that?
Best Blue.
Best Blue. I think that's, and then there was the baseball one.
Mononofu.
Mm-hmm. And those ended pretty damn quick. So,
which is a shame.
That tends to be just the way it goes with sports manga and Jump, because there's always a demand for them because they just like to have, it seems like, 3 running. So they keep on getting them, pumping them out until something sticks.
I'm trying to if you consider Straighten Up one, then it's okay. Because I was going to say, for the longest time, it seemed like they always tried to have at least 2 concurrently running ones. And since Kuroko no Basket's no longer in there, I was going to say, I guess there was a void, but I guess Straighten Up maybe fills that. That area. Sports medicine is another one.
Yeah.
Alright. What's up next?
Next we are gonna do Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma. So last time Soma said, well, our friends all got kicked out of school. What if we just take over the council and get them back? And everyone went, why wasn't this the plan from the beginning? Because I have a theory for why this is happening. People were kind of messaging us saying, like, yeah, I hear that this actually isn't doing too well in Japan. And I went and looked back, and it looks like, according to where the series has been positioned, like, it bottom five a few times. I think that until Soma went up against Hayama, people were just kind of, like, not reacting very well to the series of tests, which, given how we were feeling about the first two legs of their exams, I totally get that.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I think that this central saga, I guess is the only way you could call it, has been exciting for the most part, but there was a real dip as the start of this new, what is it, the second year exam or something like that, whatever it's called.
The exam in order to move on to the second year, yeah.
Yeah, like that whole thing didn't really do a whole much. There wasn't a whole lot of excitement to it, especially since it seemed like we were kind of getting the same thing over and over again.
I mean, we'll see if the battle with Hayama moved the needle pretty soon, because there's like an eight week delay, I think, on the results actually influencing stuff. Mm. But yeah. Yeah. So everyone reacts to this by being like, "Okay, well, I don't know about this," and Silva points out, "Well, okay, we're down to the 9 people on the." And Aranda already has the 10th seat, so we would just need another 4 to take a majority on the council. You know, have 5 out of 9. So we can do it. And Megumi's like, this is impossible, I don't know about this.
Has anyone yet, because I'm even trying to think of in the chapter, does anyone address that he doesn't have the math right?
He does not. There are 4 of us, and we can take 4 more. Well, Aranda already has one, so no, we can't.
She can't take 2 seats. It never comes, like, I feel like no one says that in this chapter. Everyone's like, I couldn't possibly be a member of the council. No one's like, wait, dude, who's the other person?
So, yeah, I don't know about this. I mean, like, when you consider all the different people that have been banned, who the hell is going to be their person to help them take another seat? Is it going to be one of the former council members, like Ishiki or Kuga? Or maybe it's going to be, I don't know, Subaru?
I was going to say, I'm like, of the characters that were, like, introduced to the series that are still actually part of the school, I think Subaru is one of the only ones that's left. It's like Subaru and the fucking, like, gross food girl, like the one who makes all the weird, creepy food who's obsessed with the Hanada. Or whatever her fucking name is.
Right, Sadako, I think was her.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. yeah, Megumi, of course, is freaking out. And Takumi says, wait a minute, when you say we take the seat, Yeki, oh, there you go again. The Shogi only works at both sides to it. I mean, yeah, we would totally kick their asses, but they would never agree to that contest, you idiots. So, Soma's like, you're right, we need a bit of advice. Hey, Rindo, can you give me a seat on the council? This fucking goes up in hazards. Oh, God. I love the face that Rindo makes when she's spit-taking it. Oh, man. Yeah, and Rindo just says, like, yeah, come on, there is no way that they would agree to this. I mean, that sounds fun as hell to me, but nobody else on the council is going to agree to it, except Aranda over there. So Aranda just says, no, I mean, that's a valiant idea. I like your confidence, but I'm just going to go to my father and beg him to get my friends back. If I appeal to him, then maybe he'll agree to do it. And so she rushes off because she learns that Nozomi is actually there, but he's a guy on his way to one of the other testing locations, so she rushes off to catch him before he can board his helicopter, because Nozomi travels in fucking style.
I wish it were, like, just shaped like a dragon, so I could just, like, I could fully finish, like, my Kaiba ideal of this guy. Because every time he shows up on the scene, that's kind of the music that plays in my mind.
Not the movie music that he's got.
No, not that.
Don't say if I were you. Say what you would do if you controlled the school.
It's like, what is this?
Because you're not a zombie.
This lame-ass, like, knockoff Boston remix shit that you gave to Kaiba? What are you doing? They're like, we found this really affordable foreigner knockoff band who agreed to do a Kaiba theme song.
We paid them literally, like, the spare stuff we had in our pockets. Not even spare change, just, like, pocket lint and paper clips, wad of gum. And they were like, yeah, we'll write the song for you.
They're like, wait, we can have three old receipts to Roy Rogers? Sweet!
Oh, God. So, Erina does manage to catch Azami. And Azami says, like, nah. Stop trying to get in the way. I'm going to expel all those people. Assuming that other test proctors don't play fast and loose with my orders, Rindo, you're going to be confined to your room at the next testing center. It's like, eh, whatever. Somebody else has got to kick them out even if I don't do it. I'm the second seat. You can't get rid of me. Fuck you. Erina begs for mercy, begs him to bring Alice and Misako and everyone else back. And Azami does not even say anything to her. He just turns around and gets ready to board the plane, even after she's prostrated herself before him. And she starts to tear up because she remembers, you know, everyone together working hard and vowing to reach their second year together and knowing that she can't do anything for them. And Soma says, well, you tried, but yeah, this is the only option that we've got. Let's settle things plate to plate. Because it's a cooking manga, so...
It fits, you know?
Yeah.
I sometimes forget, like, it was something Toriko did all the time, where all of its, like, threats and shit would be food-related. Like, it's like, and now the seasoning is perfect! Like, I miss that being just a part of food-related manga.
Yes, his You Are Already Dead was the... Yeah.
He's like... The timer on the oven has already gone off. The timer on the oven of your life has already dinged.
Soon, your loaf will be ready, and I will test it with sticking in this toothpick.
That's when the dude's like, ouch! Like a screen shatter. Ah!
So, Soma challenges Azami, saying, yeah, let's settle this, you know, get past all these rigged tests. Let's have my crew go against yours with an all-out shokuyaki for seats of the Council of Ten. And Azami goes...
This has already been explained to you. You are already fed. That is great. Aaron rolls 380. Yeah, that's great.
Oh my god. Oh, God. Azami says, what an utterly ridiculous waste of time, Soma Yukihira. Do you truly think you're in any position to bargain with me? And, he's just like, you're wasting my time. You know, find something worthwhile that you can actually bring in order to get me to agree to that. And he turns away again, but suddenly a hand appears on Soma's head. Because Juichiro and Senzaimon are ninjas and snuck up behind them in a way that Azami... So you can definitely tell that there was, probably a little bit of a no-huddle call here. Because things are very quickly taking a turn for, okay, we have to just fucking... No, we're going for this team fight. Fuck these exams. We have to get people interested in this arc again.
I mean, on one end, I think that works. Like, to be fair, the exam itself wasn't particularly interesting. There's a part of me that's a little ashamed we're not going to potentially get, like, individual fights between some of these people, because I was kind of looking forward to seeing, like, Megumi or Aldini have their own fights, but the idea of, like, a team Shokugeki does have me pretty excited in and of itself. Now, I don't know exactly how it's going to happen, because they just throw the idea out there. Regimen du Cuisine Shokugeki, a team against right. team. And it's not clear if it's...
Teams of five strive to survive!
Shane McMahon will be on your team for some reason. Like, why does this keep happening?
Oh my god, it's team one. What the...
How does he keep making it on teams?
Shane McMahon, the 40-year-old not traditionally trained wrestler, is undefeated in 2016.
But, they still haven't explained whether or not it's... And, you know, we'll get more details. But if it's, like, Soma and his friends take on the council, or if it's, like, me and Soma take on you and someone else, like what the team dynamic essentially is going to be. But it's interesting nonetheless. Like, no matter what happens, a team Shokugeki isn't something we've really seen a lot of. And I'm kind of interested to see it, and it's also the case of, like, hey, let's get some big players here and see what happens, so.
I am almost certain that this is going to be teams with an odd number of members will compete against each other match. I mean, that's just the traditional way of manga doing this. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have the teams, like, each prepare, like, a full course meal, and have those huge layouts be judged against each other, but I think that in order to emphasize and give moments to shine to each of the members in Soma's group, that's probably not the way they're going to go. It's probably going to be, you know, like, Megumi against one council member, Takumi against a council member, Soma against a council member, and it's probably going to go down to Soma against whoever in the, you know, fifth or whatever the last spot is. Or maybe Arena in the last spot, something like that.
That would be kind of an interesting twist, is if they put Arena on the opposite team, like Azami forced her on it. And it's that notion, she's like, well, I'll just sabotage it. It's like, you're really going to lose your like pride as a chef on this? And she has to just hold on to that hope, like, I know I'm good, but I'm going to believe that they can be better in this moment or something. I think that would be kind of an interesting twist to put on there. This dynamic where she's like, I'm not going to sabotage myself because I still have pride as a chef, but at the same time, I'm going to believe in my friends that they can create a dish that's even better than what I can at my best. I don't know. We shall see.
But, I mean, I get the impression that probably what happened is that the editors kind of went to the team and just said, yeah, this isn't really working. Can you just, like, get the ball rolling? Probably not in the sense of, or we'll cancel you, but, you know, editors have influence over series, even when they're, like, you know, the top dogs. Like, there's that story about how Akira Toriyama changed the hell out of the Android Saga because an old editor of his was like, yeah, that villain sucks. That sucks, too. That one sucks, too. Oh, my God. You make Cell a little bit cooler, okay? So I think that that's probably more something that happened, is that they were told, this isn't really working. Can you change things up? Can you just accelerate things a bit? And they were like, yeah, okay.
And if that is the case.
Because I highly doubt that they were like, oh my God, we're in danger of getting canceled. Because there was definitely a slump in terms of this, but Food Wars is still a pretty damn popular series. So.
Yeah, you know, and regardless of what it is, it's still just kind of, you know, as a reader, I'm just sort of excited to see what's going to happen from here. Like, it's just, things are picking up in a good way.
Mm-hmm. All right. let's see.
Next up
is Red Sprite.
Okay.
Which means that we'll finish on One Piece.
Oh, did we not add Demon's Plan in there?
I didn't read Demon's Plan.
Okay.
Did you?
No. So I'll just cross that guy off. I'm sure it was very good. I wasn't able to retain a whole lot of manga this week. I've seriously been, like, operating off of, like, 3 hours of sleep every night.
Red Sprite, it's the final chapter. Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Final chapter after the Red Lightning. Last time, through the combined efforts of Al and Mono and, of course, Tatsu, they unleashed a combination attack on Blackburn, Super Mono Thunder, which basically disintegrates the guy. Tatsu explains that he deliberately lured Blackburn into the ship so that they could direct Mono's thunder into this electromagnetic force field area inside the ship. Basically, they lured him into an area where the thunder would be way more effective. And all that's left of him is now the skeleton that the flesh formed around when he first appeared. So Tatsu takes his sword and he slices the skull in half. It's a really cool panel when he does it.
Oh, yeah.
They've defeated the elite soldier from the enemy army. but they actually receive a warning from, I guess, Blackburn's essence? I'm not sure. It's like a ghost of electricity or something. And he says, "You took me, Blackburn, down. One ash down. Impressive. But be sure to take this to heart, Tatsu Frampt. One day, you will turn to ash as well." So, yeah. Many adventures they had after that point. This is such a shame. Yeah. That we get to just see it end like this. What was that one? Takamagahara, I think it was called?
Takamagahara.
Where they just cut to the end and they were like, look at...
Well,
not happening now.
That's the thing. There are like a couple different ways a manga can end. And one way it ends is the, oh shit, immediately start ending things and then... like, glimpse at everything we were planning to do but didn't have the time for, which is, like, what Takamagahara did. It's what Double Arts did. Or you could just be like this, and you end the arc you're on now, and you just say, and the adventures continue. It's also what, like, that's what Barrage did. Like, he finished his fight against the villain at the time, and then they're like, and more adventures were had in space. I actually kind of prefer this ending overall, because at least this part of the story... it gets its own closure. Like, it's a shame that you're like, oh, I bet there were all these other ideas he just never had the time to get to. Like, we never see this guy ever get to presumably fight Atlas, you know? It's just not going to be shown to us. But I'm glad that this part of the story got to be told. Like, you know, the author had time to tell this tale of what Edenia, or whatever the place, the fuck this name's, this country's name
Edenia,
is.
Yeah.
Edenia. I feel like that was something from someone else, too. I feel like it's like a Sailor Moon town or something. But, you know, it got to tell that story. It got to show this relationship between him and Al. Like, it got to do that. It didn't have to cut that short so it could be like, and here's what Tatsu did when he met his other friends. Like, there's small glimpses to them at the end of the chapter, teases for what presumably
his plans where they are and what might have been, yeah.
Yeah, but it's nice to see, like, one story brought to its own, well, not own closure, because obviously it wasn't probably all planned, but at least this story got to come off on a fuller note rather than just get cut off so it could be like, okay, and then here's the other things we plan to do, et cetera, et cetera.
There's some stuff that happens, like they hold this big press conference where the princess and Tatsu are shaking hands in their formal attire, and the princess declares they recognize Begonia as an official nation that they're forming a military alliance with, and then we get to see Atlas reacting to this, looking really... God, I wish we could have seen more from this guy, because what little we got from him was really effective, and here he's saying, this is a challenge towards us. It is evil. It cannot happen. We are the nation of justice. We must fulfill our duty to the world. We must exterminate those who will not gather the ashes. And that, we never get to see it happen.
It's a shame, because that was definitely one of the cooler villains, I think, in Jump running right now. He was really an exciting kind of antagonist.
And yeah, from there we see, you know, the two groups celebrating together before the Red Sprite takes off. We cut around to see where some of the other old classmates of theirs are located. Then we just see their ship taking off into the sky while Tatsu says, "Follow the red lightning, come with us."
Hey, you know what? For everything that it had against it, you know, obviously it didn't fare too well in the rankings, I still think this is a really fun series. You know, I may not have had a whole lot to say on it every week, but I definitely enjoyed what it brought to the magazine. It had an interesting art style. It had fantastic writing with some of its villains and characters. It had a brilliant style to it when it came to creating uniqueness in some of its intimidating moments, like Blackburn, the guy whose body is like evaporating yet slowly rebuilding itself the entire time, and bless you, just elements like that. You only get one, and I just think it was a really fun manga that I hope we see more from this guy. And I think just ultimately I'm glad that this part of Red Sprite got to end the way it did, rather than having to be like, all right, like the battle immediately ended and, you know, I grouped up with all my friends and we live happily ever after. It's a shame you don't get to see the end, but it's like at least you do get to have the idea of like, and there were many more adventures, and you can kind of imagine them yourself, more or less.
Um, Yagitomo Hiro, I talked about him last time, this being his second Jump series that has ended very quickly despite potential shown. But again, I'll say it, I'm sure that he's going to be big. He's too talented not to. Yeah. So I look forward to his next series and hope things work out for him soon.
Absolutely.
All right. One Piece, chapter 847, Luffy and Big Mom.
I legitimately thought it was Nami on the cover of this.
It says Happy Birthday Kairos on the banner.
I legitimately was like, why is Nami at Kairos' birthday? And I was like, oh right, Rebecca just looks exactly fucking like Nami. I sat there for like a minute, I was trying to figure out, I was like, why is she there?
I think that's a cute picture, by the way. Yeah. They're celebrating Kairos' birthday, and he just finally gets to celebrate it with his family.
Yeah, that's nice.
They actually remember him now. So things have taken a turn for the worse for almost every single Straw Hat that is on Big Mom's island. We see that Chopper and Carrot have finally been caught by Brulé. In the mirror world, in fact, where they're preparing to cook Carrot and eat her, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, well, they're like, we know you're a mink, but hey, fuck it, I'll eat you. You're still, like, a rabbit person. You're half food.
But Chopper actually has a plan working at this point. He's chained up in his heavy point form. And apparently he's not chained up with Sea Stone. So he's just like, okay, you know, I can just slip out of here by shrinking down, or if I really need to, I can use monster points. So, you know, this is my chance in order to actually get them, put my plan to action. We cut to Big Mom, who is meeting with Sanji's siblings and father. I don't think that Sanji himself is there.
No, he doesn't.
I don't think he's there.
You see him later, like in his like room in the tower. So
she is showing them this set of these books in her library, which is quite interesting. She pins actual creatures into these books, and she explains that. She collects them and seals them inside the pages of the book to preserve them. Which I guess works. I don't think she actually explains.
Yeah, she does. It's one of her sons has the book power. Remember, we saw him fighting against Luffy.
Oh, right. So. Okay. Duh.
So, yeah, I forget which son it is, but she explains that it's because of his power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the power of my son, Montador.
Okay. So Judge says, you know, we've seen so many different people, here in this land. And she's like, oh yeah, so that's the point of Toto Land. But I couldn't help but notice that there is a certain species that is absent and one that would stand out above the rest. There aren't any giants here. And Big Mom looks really pissed off when he says that. Just goes from like, look at how awesome my library. Fuck did you just say?
Well, it seems to be an important thing. Like, we're getting kind of teases to it. It's probably one of those things if I thought harder on it, I could come up with a theory, but I don't feel like... I kind of feel like just going along for the ride. But it's interesting because this all kind of pertains back to that dream she has and why she wants to gigantify mm-hmm. people. She wants everyone to sit at the table, yet no giants there, and she seems to have a very violent reaction to that. So, obviously the giants play some part into this.
Maybe it's possible that she is, like, part giant, and so her family that she came from was all different sizes.
It's tough to tell, because One Piece has kind of done that thing that they have to do in WoW, where every time they make a raid boss, they have to just make them 7 times taller than you are, despite the fact that they're, like, the exact same race. They're just like, this dude's huge, because otherwise you couldn't see him at the fuck, like, the clusterfuck that's going to be this fight. So that's what, like, One Piece has sort of done. They're just like, yeah, normally these people would be, like, regular size, but fuck it. Doflamingo's 11 foot 12 now. Like, why don't you just say 12 feet? They're like, it's does. We've never been that high. I don't know.
This one goes to 11.
No, I don't know what to do when it gets higher.
One of her henchmen shows up and reports that they have brought in the two that Mom asked for, and she's like, "What the hell's wrong with you? You're acting really nervous." He's like, "Oh man, it's so hard to keep my cool next to these super cool German 66. And I think that just gets her more pissed off because she's already angry at them. We cut to elsewhere in the library where another book gets opened up. And this is where Luffy and Nami are locked up inside a cage, and Perospero are in there, is there to greet them with a Denonmushi that Big Mom is speaking to them through. And so Big Mom, of course, mocks Luffy and brings up, "Oh, hey, I was afraid you'd forgotten your promise at Fishman Island," and he's like, "I haven't! Still gonna punch you in the face!" and even challenges her to fight him right now. I will note, by the way, that I know that a few chapters ago there was that conversation we had about Sanji, you know, kicking Luffy so hard that his tooth fell out. And he's been missing that tooth ever since. I mean, he hasn't healed from any of the damage, so, you know, who knows. But that tooth is consistently missing now, so that might be permanent.
I'll hold on to that until if the arc ends and it's still missing, then I'm gonna be like, "Oh, that's interesting." Because I'm like,
didn't Brook lose his teeth at one point?
Yeah, but they gave the excuse that if he drinks milk, it comes back because milk helps it makes healthy bones.
Yes.
But like when Usopp,
that works.
Yeah, when Usopp fought Miss Merry Christmas and Mr. Five. He got the shit beat out of him. Like, his face was just shattered into pieces, and he's fine at the end of it. Like, you know, that kind of injury, I feel like, eventually just gets healed in one piece. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Just needs to brush his teeth.
Yeah. He needs to drink some milk. Maybe think some meat in it. Meat milk.
Meat milk. Ugh. It's gross. Big Mom says that, God, you're asking for trouble, you know. I don't need to get involved to have you killed, but if you forget about Sanji, I'm willing to let you walk out alive. The marriage is really important to me, and, but I need you to stay there until everything's finished. If you rob me of my delight, then you're really going to regret it. And I love the way her face is drawn in that panel. Like, I mean, we saw her getting, like, angry before, but this one makes her look really threatening.
Mm-hmm.
She then goes on to bring up another thing, which was, you know, when he was on Fishman Island, "Remember when you ate all the sweets that were meant to be shipped back to me? You gave all of Team Neptune's treasure to me as a sign of contrition. What do you think was among those chests? You can't ask for it back now. One of them is a chest handed down on Fishman Island through the generations. The legendary Tamate Box." Is this the first time we've heard about this at all?
It's not ringing a bell immediately to me, but I could be kind of mistaken on it.
But, yeah, she's like, "Yeah, you gave me a national treasure. So, yeah, I'll let all those sweets you ate slide. Sure, fine. And I'm going to open that sucker up at the tea party tomorrow in front of everyone."
I forgot. It's it was revealed before. It's what makes you supposedly grow older. It's what Vander Drecken wanted to use on Shirahoshi to make her older so that he can marry her.
Oh my.
Supposedly the box has the power to, like, make people older, but it's also, like, it got basically refined into that pill that Hody and everyone on Fishman Island used to, like,
get steroids
stronger. Somebody
said, "Filthy humans!"
Some people are saying now it's a bomb, so.
Yeah, she, might not be a good idea for her to open that box up. Luffy says that he gets sick because he doesn't want Sanji married and leave the crew. So he says, "Hey, let us talk to Pudding because she's our friend." And Big Mom says, "Ha ha, you idiot! Pudding's working for me. She's really evil." Because it's like, "I knew it this whole time." she says, "That's ridiculous. Like, why would you be friends with her? And you? I heard you killed Lola, girl." And Nami says, "No, she gave me that card as a sign of our friendship. And And Charlotte says, because Nami brings up, she said that all we had to do was show you the Viva card, you would help us. And Charlotte says, no, I don't care if she's doing all right. She should be dead. Tell me where she is, and I'll have hitmen sit there to get rid of her for good. I can't believe she still thinks of us as mother and daughter. So, obviously, there is stuff here going on that we're going to get explained in the future, because Nami's impression of the relationship between Lola and very different from what the reality seems to be, and seemingly what Lola thought it was, too, for that matter. Charlotte says, oh gosh, if only she'd done what I'd said, gotten married, the power I'd have gained. I'd already have destroyed Kaido, red hair, and even white beard by this point. I'd already be the king of the pirates. Who the hell is she supposed to marry? So, Luffy cuts into all this, saying, this is a stupid story. So direct. He says, it was Lola who didn't get married. It's you who failed to become King of the Pirates. And here I am picking another fight with you. I'm not backing down just because you're one of the four emperors. We're going to take Sanji back. And at the end of the day, we're going to win. We cut elsewhere to where Sanji is sitting on in the window of his room, worried about his friends for a bit. And then we cut away again to where Baron Tamago is being alerted to there being a tiger mink, a jaguar, on the premises.
What? Ah, hey, Pedro, I knew you would infiltrate our the castle. Well, that's Brooke.
Brooke, of course, as this is going on, the diversion is in place, so it's time for him to take action. He says that he's going to perform a specialized performance. Hey. So Brooke's gonna get to do something!
I'm stoked for that. I always like it when Brooke gets to do something cool. It doesn't happen nearly often enough. So.
No.
Fingers crossed that he actually does get to do something really cool here.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. He's the only one...
This is Brooke's time to shine. He's the only one who's not...
Yeah, like everyone else is kind of up a shit creek without a paddle. So.
Interesting chapter. Hinting at a lot of things that are seemingly going to be happening in this arc. But I like a lot of the stuff that we're getting in terms of Big Mom, in terms of her history and her character. You know, hints at little things that could be happening, could have been happening with her that make her more interesting. I haven't really had a problem with Big Mom until this point, but, you know, more with her would definitely be appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's still definitely a lot of stuff about her that's just like, well, she's this big woman who takes people's souls and likes candy, I guess? So, more would be nice. That's it. That's the manga for this week. Yeah. So, I guess we'll just name our favorite from this week of manga. Honestly, I thought not a whole lot really stood out to me positively from this week of manga. I went with One Piece for my favorite chapter, but I definitely do feel like that it would not have been my favorite had there been, you know, stronger choices to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
I like what we got from it, but I really wish that there had been more this week.
I'm going to go with My Hero. I think I really had fun with this chapter. I liked seeing Bakugo and that kind of story develop. I think it's moving in an interesting pace and an interesting place to an interesting place, rather. So I'm going to give it to My Hero this week.
And I'm giving my MVP to Bakugo. Same reasons. I really liked, like I said, when we were actually talking about the chapter, the artwork, the way that his face is drawn, looking a bit more into what's going on in his head without actually just looking at his thoughts, being allowed to read more into it. Yeah, I like it.
I concur. I've given it to Bakugo.
And One Piece wins our chat room poll this week. One Piece is on a bit of a roll lately. Things are getting pretty interesting with that as we things get worse and worse for the Straw Hats. Things get more and more interesting for the series, I guess. Alright, so that's it. That's going to do it. Thank you guys for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show usually around 7 p.m. on Wednesdays. That's Eastern Standard Time, by the way. You can check us out live streaming on hitbox.tv/RollOT. And now, also, we're back on twitch.tv/RollOT as well.
Yes, so you can check it either. I have a stream thing pulled up, so we're able to see the chat room for both rooms, so just go with whatever provider works best for you. I know I heard some people saying the Hitbox was giving them issues, so feel free to use the Twitch one for all you want to do. You know, chat over there. Everything you could do here, you could do there, except for voting in the poll, because the poll's attached to Hitbox. So pop over there to make the poll vote, but otherwise, yeah, you can stick and hit Twitch and enjoy that. Use all your fucking your kappas and all the nonsense the kids use nowadays, right? The kappa yeah. Danks, the dank kappas, yes. Is that what the kids call it? I'm hip, right?
Kappas.
That's what fucking like new age
actually,
sports
that sounds like,
be called.
That actually sounds like something that a word that you would use to describe like a mythical kappa, come to think of it. So anyway.
Like the legendary one you fight in fucking King's Quest. Like, you have to fight the dank captor.
I guess. Anyway, be sure to follow us on Twitter so you can stay updated on when we're running the show and where. Follow us at RollOT, at Y Ruler of Time, and also the podcast itself, at WMR Podcast. You can check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, as well as on iTunes and on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to us and leave a comment or rating and spread the show around so that you can help us out a little bit if you want to.
Yeah, we got one
help us beat those woodworkers. Come on, guys.
Yeah, we got one from Neo Ultra Mike, who said, what really works about WMR is the comedic banter between the hosts. Though Chris is more a general upbeat and jokey member, Nick's sardonic deadpan perfectly fits in as he knows when to interject that. Keep up the work, good work, guys. And I hope for more fun, be it loving on One Piece of Promised Neverland or tearing into the weekly fails of Fairy Tail or Black Clover. Although I would note, I don't think Black Clover is all that bad.
We never get people who are going to be like, why are you so sad in Fairy Tail at the time? It's like, I think that we need to just be, like, accept when we don't like stuff, honestly. Like, that's why I'm just, like, so unapologetic. I'm just like, I fucking hate Asta. Just like, I don't care. Come on, guys. Come at me, bro.
They broke your spirit after you talked about Bleach enough online. You gave up that, like, fuck it.
I don't give a shit anymore. It's just like, oh my god. Let me not like stuff. Be sure to send criticism, ask us questions, and suggest future manga for us to read to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Send us an email, and that way we can archive all of that stuff and keep.
Yes.
Special thanks go out to our supporters on Patreon. If you want to provide a little bit of extra support to the show, you can become one of our patrons, and that allows us to do extra stuff for the show. We do commentaries, we do bonus episodes, and we do Q&A sessions. Here's that at patreon.com/weeklymangarecap.
Special thanks, by the way, to our newest patron, Chris FK, and Brofist there for you guys for helping us out. It's much appreciated. And if you're curious about some of those things that we just did, I just recently put up the November Q&A that we did where we answered a lot of you guys' questions, got through a whole bunch of those. We got a whole bunch more to go through, but still, feel free to send any you have in there and, you know, rest assured we're going to get to those. We also did a Digimon commentary earlier this month that's going to be going up on the Patreon soon, and anybody can get it. Don't have to even be a Patreon, like, member. You don't have to, you know, not even be pledged, but you don't even have to have a fucking account to get it. Anybody can go in there. And we'll also be putting up our movie commentary from this month, which was the Appleseed movie from 1988. Was that it? 1988?
1989. 1988 or 89.
I think it was 88, because it was technically before I was born. So go check that out, guys. If you want to enjoy those, will be up there very soon. And that's just kind of a glimpse of the stuff that we're able to do because of the Patreon. So it's greatly appreciated. Guys, anything you're able to do is very much appreciated on our end.
Yeah. And what was I doing? All right. Lastly, special thanks to the guys who help us make the podcast what it is. Steve Mann, our tower card artist. You can check out his work all over the internet in many NSFW places. His Tumblr is iDropBoobs. I think he might have multiple Tumblrs. I'm not sure. And he's also got his own Patreon, patreon.com the memory, can actually check out all of the different cover title cards that he does for our show.
Yes, you can see them even if you're not, again, you don't have to be a Patreon supporter or anything like that to see those. Those are all just available.
Hmm.
So if you're wanting to make, if you're wanting to make Obama in a thong your fucking desktop artwork, you can do it.
Or, you know, someone, him crying in the corner with an image of Akisora.
Akisora.
Also, of course, Infamous Planet, who last week graced us with that awesome JoJo frame. Chris apparently doesn't like him anymore.
Fuck him.
Thanks, Infamous. That's it. So next week, hopefully, we'll be ready to talk about the Boobs and Butt Battle series. Until then, have a good one, guys.
Yeah. Do we want to close out on anything interesting, or do we just
no,
fade up?
We should make it as boring as possible. We should talk about the different ways to file your taxes.
I mean, I use TurboTax, because I just got kind of tired of always like trying to do things myself. But I
do. I use that, too. I know some people use like a H&R Block.
I use them. They just charge too much. Like, for stuff, it's good if you have a whole lot of things you need to do, but if you don't, like, if you don't have a whole lot of, like, new finances to report or anything like that, it's so simple to just do it yourself online, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a matter of just, like, you know, they charge you because people, they know that they can get away with it because people appreciate the convenience of it. No one's willing to actually learn how to do it properly because Jesus Christ is such a goddamn pain. You only have to do it once a year anyway, so why bother?
Yeah. All right, goodbye, guys.